Radio Prague News.
Mirek Topolánek and Jiří Paroubek have held a surprise meeting at the Prime Minister's residence, this following the breakdown of talks on Tuesday. The possibility of a Czech peacekeeping force in Lebanon remains under discussion, and Komerční banka's online banking system receives extra security features after money disappears from some accounts. Civic Democratic Chairman Mirek Topolánek and Social Democratic Chairman Jiří Paroubek met on Wednesday morning at the official residence of the Prime Minister. The two men, Mr. Topolánek as Prime Minister-designate and Mr. Paroubek the outgoing Prime Minister, are in the midst of intense negotiations over the formation of a new government. The Wednesday morning meeting came as a surprise after Tuesday's scuffles over where to meet and who would be present. The Civic Democrats are currently trying to secure support for a minority government from the Social Democratic Party. Both Mr. Topolánek and Mr. Paroubek have now expressed confidence in a possible solution to the political deadlock, saying that it could be only a matter of a few more days. The outgoing Social Democratic cabinet is still discussing the possibility of sending Czech soldiers to Lebanon to join an international peacekeeping force administered by the United Nations. According to Foreign Minister Cyril Svoboda, Friday's meeting of European Union foreign ministers will be key to the Czech Republic's decision. Mr. Svoboda says that it is important to clarify whether the Czech mission's mandate would be one of peacekeeping and observation, or whether the units would also be charged with disarming Hezbollah. The foreign minister is also concerned about the costs of such a mission and says that it must not jeopardize outgoing Czech peacekeeping in Afghanistan, Iraq, Kosovo, or Bosnia-Herzegovina. Mr. Svoboda's public statements on the issue of Czech involvement in Lebanon have been more cautious than those of the outgoing Prime Minister Jiří Paroubek. And one of the Czech Republic's largest banks, Komerční banka, has confirmed that money disappeared from the accounts of 10 clients using the online banking service My Bank or Moje Banka. A bank spokesperson said that Komerční banka's security system was not overridden, but that the thieves accessed information on personal computers, thus gaining access to accounts. Komerční banka is introducing new safety measures for its online banking clients, combining the traditional computer access password with a code sent to the client's mobile phone. And finally, a quick look at the weather. Daytime highs are expected to reach 23 degrees Celsius, with partly cloudy skies in the next several days. I'm Linda Mashtalif, and that's the end of the news.
This is Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Pavla Horáková. In today's program, we have the latest on the state of negotiations on a possible minority government. The Czech national airliner says it might need a massive financial injection from the state, and one of the country's leading universities has decided to crack down on copycats. Also today, we'll take you to the eastern town of Zlín. Please stay with us. Prime Minister-designate Mirek Topolánek has set until the end of next week as a deadline to try and reach a deal with the Social Democrats on support for his proposed minority Civic Democrat government. It would be an understatement to say that the devil is in the details, and sticking points have been several. Almost 3 months after the election ended in parliamentary deadlock, it is still unclear when the country will see a new government. Jan Wellinger has the details.
Negotiations on support for a new minority government haven't been easy, and so far this week ended in failure rather than success, at least in the public eye. On Monday, the Social Democrats led by Jiří Paroubek angrily walked out of talks, and a good deal of bluster, accusations and finger-pointing followed from both them and their political rivals. On Tuesday, further meetings were pushed aside. This has raised questions whether there can be an agreement between the Civic and Social Democrats at all, or whether the country has taken a step closer to early elections. Political analyst Jiří Pehe says that what the public is seeing at the moment is a certain amount of posturing from both sides, but he thinks that agreement eventually will be reached.
We are seeing a game of sorts in which politicians from both parties are trying to create the impression that they are not dependent on each other, and at the same time they are behind the scenes working on an agreement which will basically make them dependent on each other. In other words, let's say a hidden grand coalition in which one party will be able to govern with perhaps the presence of a few non-partisans in the government, and the other party in exchange for some concessions will tolerate the ruling party. Both parties are trying very hard to convince the public that they are not in a grand coalition. Especially the Civic Democratic Party views this as a very important message, because it promised repeatedly before the elections that it would not go into a grand coalition. And so what we are seeing is basically posturing, and I think that both parties are coming close to an agreement.
Still, agreement has not been reached, and it is possible that Prime Minister-designate Topolánek may feel pushed too far, beyond where his party can willingly or realistically go. One sticking point, for example, has been Mr. Paroubek's insistence that the new government's rule be strictly limited to a 2-year term, something that has been unacceptable for Mr. Topolánek for obvious reasons. 2 years would leave his cabinet at a clear disadvantage, too little time and too much pressure to make a real mark. Political analyst Bohumil Doležal said, "It is not an easy situation for the Civic Democrats, and I think that they have made many unnecessary concessions to the Social Democrats so far. If it continues this way, in a certain sense for them, it will be political suicide. At this moment, the only dignified solution would be early elections." If negotiations in the end come to naught, Prime Minister Topolánek will not be left many options. First, his proposed cabinet would try but likely fail in a confidence vote, and that would lead to a second stage whereby rival Jiří Paroubek would be allowed to try his hand at forming a government, something promised him by the president. There, the Social Democrats would also be one vote short, as realistically they could depend only on support from the communists. In order to be more successful than Topolánek, Mr. Paroubek would need to produce a hidden ace. Analyst Jiří Pehe again.
It is possible that Paroubek knows something that the public doesn't at this point, and it is quite possible that a certain hardening of his stances that we can see in the last few days may be connected to the fact that he may know of one or two Greens who would be willing to support his government. It cannot be excluded, but at this point what the deputies of the Green Party are saying, and those people seem to be united, and they don't seem to be at this point prepared to, or any of them prepared to support Mr. Paroubek.
Political analyst Jiří Pehe ending that report by Jan Wellinger. State-run Czech Airlines posted a 773 million crown loss in the first half of the year, bringing its overall debt to half its basic capital. The company's management said on Tuesday it could not weather the storm without a massive financial injection from the state. Daniela Lazarová has the story.
A recent dramatic surge in capacity would suggest that the state-owned carrier, a member of the SkyTeam Alliance, is doing good business. In reality, the airline has been going through turbulent times, suffering heavy losses as a result of expensive fuel and fierce competition from low-cost airlines. A decision to boost capacity by more than 50% made by ČSR's previous management was allegedly undertaken in the absence of preparation and necessary restructuring, which brought the company to its knees. ČSR's president Radomír Lašák, who took over the state-owned carrier at the start of the year when it was already in deep trouble, says that he cannot turn around the company's fortunes without a massive financial injection from the state.
I would say that 1.5 to 2 billion crowns would help us out of this crisis. Even with the steps undertaken to consolidate the airline, we're going to need that kind of money.
The steps undertaken include a layoff of up to 1,000 people, among them 50 managers, that is about 20% of Cheshire staff. The airline is rethinking its flight plan in view of competition from low-cost airlines and considering new destinations. According to unofficial sources, flights to Moscow will be added, while flights to Edinburgh, Split, Cork and Sarajevo may be scrapped. The airline is considering renewing its long-distance fleet and is looking at new markets in China, Japan and Thailand. A consolidation of the charter flights market is also deemed essential, and Cheshire managers say that the company either has to buy the rival airline travel service or sell its entire charter fleet. At present, the latter option looks more probable, and the management is also contemplating selling some of its activities, including cargo transport, the operation of duty-free shops and Cheshire's catering unit. The finance ministry, which holds a 57% stake in Cheshire, has not ruled out giving the company the required financial aid. However, this decision may well be left to the new government, which could affect the company's future. The right-wing Civic Democrats, who are now trying to form a minority government, are strongly in favour of privatising Czech Airlines.
Daniela Lazarová reporting. Now, with the increasing availability of different texts in electronic form, copyright violation has become easier, but also easier to track down. Experts from Masaryk University in the city of Brno have now launched a system that can find out within seconds whether a student has used a part of someone else's dissertation or essay in their work by comparing the documents stored in the university's information system. Earlier, I spoke to Miroslav Křipač, who's a member of the team that developed the software, and asked him first how the system actually works.
This system compares all documents, it means student works, essays or tests, and each document is compared with each part of other documents included inside the system. This system is optimized for English, Czech and Slovak languages.
Does it mean that students hand in their works in electronic form as well as on paper?
Yes, Masaryk University is a leading university in this country, which have very strong stress on electronic support of learning, so all documents are included in electronic form, so this is not a problem. Since 2002, we have all homeworks and all thesis documents in electronic form.
And for someone who doesn't know the system, who doesn't understand computer science, how does it work? What does a teacher or a lecturer do when he or she wants to compare the works of the students?
After the deadline of homework, a teacher can see all documents of all students who submitted it into the systems, and he can only choose one function which is included inside the global system, and this function can display him or her a list of documents that are the same as those submitted by students during their homework work.
As far as I understand it, the system works for the documents that are part of the Masaryk University system. That means all the documents that were submitted into the system. But how about copying from external sources? Can you check that as well?
Yes, today we try to manage only our internal documents, but we are prepared for other external documents. We start to receive or download external sources, external student pages or common internet resources like internet dictionaries, and include them into our system and extend the possibilities of this function.
And as Miroslav Křipač told me, Masaryk University are ready to offer their system to other universities in the Czech Republic and Slovakia. As you know, Radio Prague is celebrating its 70th birthday this year. And for those of you who collect QSL cards, which we send out in exchange for your reception reports, just a reminder that we have a very special 70th anniversary QSL card for those who will send in a reception report with details of the broadcast on the day of the anniversary. That is August the 31st, and that's next Thursday. You are tuned to Radio Prague, and it's time now for Spotlight. And this week, Colleen O'Connor takes us to the eastern town of Zlín.
In this edition of Spotlight, I'm visiting the southeast Moravian town of Zlín, a city famous for its shoemaking and film industries, as well as for its rich heritage of folk culture and traditional music. Although the first historical reference to Zlín dates back to 1322, it was never really more than a provincial backwater until the arrival of one man changed the town forever.
Nebojme se budoucnost. Polovina lidí na světě chodí bosa. A sotva 1% obyvatel...
Legendary Czech entrepreneur Tomáš Bača famously declaring that there was no need to be afraid of the future. This visionary businessman set up his shoemaking business in the town of Zlín in the 1890s. And revolutionized the footwear industry with the introduction of mass production techniques inspired by Henry Ford. The success of his business meant that the town grew rapidly in the early 20th century, as people flocked from neighboring regions to staff Batch's expanding shoe factory. Jana Machalova works at the Zlín Shoe Museum, which displays much of the footwear produced in the town at that time.
Before Tomáš Baťa, the town had some 3,000 people, and that was it. So if he didn't come, I think that Zlín would stay just a provincial town with no history at all.
Tomáš Bača's profound influence on Zlín stemmed from the fact that he sought to create a total environment for his workers. As a result, he built houses, sports centres and entertainment complexes for his employees. These functionalist buildings are what have shaped the town's current appearance, making it a veritable treasure trove of 20th century architecture. Most of the buildings were designed by legendary Czech architects František Gahura and Vladimír Karfík, with the latter designing Zlín's famous 16-storey skyscraper, which at the time was the tallest building in Central Europe. Besides its 20th century architecture and shoemaking, Zlín is also famous for its filmmaking tradition. More than 2,000 films have been made here over the last 7 decades, including many children's films and Czech animation classics. The town also hosts one of the world's largest film festivals dedicated to children's movies. Jana Machalova says that the filmmaking industry in Zlín also owes much to the legacy of Tomáš Bača.
The studio started in 1930s, and first of all it made advertisements for Bača company, advertisements for shoes, for tires and other things too. And then it also made some ordinary films and some series for children. And I think that now it is most famous for children's films. The most famous people connected with these studios are Hermína Tydlová and Karel Zeman. Karel Zeman made a film called Cesta do pravěku, which is about a group of boys going back to prehistoric times and meeting all the funny creatures like dinosaurs and so on. And I think that it was the predecessor of Jurassic Park.
Although films are still being made in Zlín, the town's shoemaking industry, established by Bača, has all but disappeared. Bača's shoe factory, which once employed thousands of people in Zlín, found itself unable to cope with international competition once the market here was relaxed after 1989, and it closed in the early 1990s. The city endured a few tough years thereafter as it struggled to come to terms with mass unemployment caused by the factory's closure. Thankfully, a number of new businesses in various fields, such as rubber and leather processing, have been cropping up to fill the void. Local businessman Boris Kovanda says that this has helped the city recover some of the entrepreneurial spirit inspired by the example of Tamás Bacsa.
Industry in Zlín now, I think, is very diversified. There's many, many small companies or middle companies for very many styles of industry. People try to continue in this, and they do it.
The main reason why the Zlín shoe factory failed to be competitive after the fall of communism was because it had become inefficient and unproductive after being nationalised following the communist coup in 1948. The communists also did their best to expunge the town's capitalist past by renaming Zlín Gottfaldov after the then party leader Clement Gottwald in 1949. Although Zlín got its name back shortly after the Velvet Revolution, Boris Kovanda says that this name change is something that still rankles with the town's inhabitants to this day.
I don't know why they renamed this town, but probably it was because they wanted to finish with this capitalist system in this town. People here in Zlín now, I think, they are very sensitive for the name Gottwaldov, because it's a little bit insulting name, and you can hear word Gottwaldov especially on ice hockey or football matches when the rival fans shout Gottwaldov instead of Zlínis shit or something like that.
These rival ice hockey fans Boris mentions are probably jealous of the fact that Zlín currently has one of the best ice hockey teams in the Czech Republic, which regularly finishes in the top places in the country's national league, and actually won the competition outright 2 years ago. Besides its ice hockey team, Zlín has produced a number of other well-known sports stars, including the legendary long-distance runner and 4 times Olympic gold medalist Emil Zatopek. Former world decathlon champion Tomáš Dvořák also hails from the town. One other local luminary worth mentioning is the documentary maker and travel writer Miroslav Sigmund, whose travel documentaries kept Czechs in touch with the outside world during the communist era. Besides traditionally being a hub of industry, Zlín is also known as a centre of Moravian culture. Many age-old folk customs and musical traditions are thriving in this area and are kept alive by the town's enthusiastic folk clubs. Boris Kovanda says the vibrant folk culture in Zlín has a lot to do with its unique geographical position, as well as the impact of the ubiquitous Tomáš Bacsa.
Zlín lies in, I think, epicenter of 3 culture areas. It's Valachia, Slovatsko and Hana. And that's why people here keep many folk traditions. Also, when Bacsa founded his company, many people from villages came to Zlín to work here, and they brought many folk traditions to here. And all these typical folk traditions survive here in Zlín. Many small children keep it in folk groups, and we all hope here that we will keep these traditions for next generations.
Interestingly, this mix of people from different regions, which occurred in Zlín during the Bacsa years, not only enriched the town's cultural heritage, it also had an impact on the type of Czech spoken here. Marcus Milton is an American translator of Czech who lives in the area.
The Czech that you speak here is probably the cleanest dialect of Czech. You know, it's closer to book Czech than any other dialect in the Czech Republic. And that's because of Tomáš Bacsa, that he had brought all these workers from the different regions and just in order so that, you know, they could communicate with each other better, that, you know, they all kind of made a standard, you know, they used the standard Czech dialect. Vrbecké děvčata, pěkné líčka máte. Vrbecké děvčata, čím se umýváte? My se umýváme.
Finally, before I go, I should warn you that if you plan on visiting Zlín, you will almost certainly be invited by some locals to join them in a shot of Slivovica, a potent spirit which is synonymous with this part of Moravia. You can buy Slivovitz in any shop in the Czech Republic, but, as Jana Machalova says, most people in Zlín prefer to make their own version of this liquor, which many credit with having magical powers.
I think that's very, very typical. In English, I think it's called plum brandy. And especially in the villages, people plant plum trees and then they make slivovice out of these plums. Even my father does it. And the drink is very, very popular because some people claim that it's a cure, that you can heal everything with slivovice.
Do you think that's true?
Well, a friend of mine suffered from toothache and he took a sip of slivovice and was okay.
That was Spotlight with Colleen O'Connor. And you can hear more on Tomáš Baťa this coming Sunday on Radio Prague in a special program in which we look at a town built by the Bata Company in the 1930s, but not in Czechoslovakia, but in England. And that brings us to the end of the program. Don't forget that you can go back to all the stories you've heard on the internet. The address is www.radio.cz. If you'd like to let us know what you think about our broadcasts, do drop us a line at english@radio.cz or our postal address, Radio Prague, 12099 Prague, the Czech Republic. From me, Pavla Horáková, and the rest of the team here in the Czech capital, goodbye and thanks for listening. Okenečkem bývá velký mraz a v tej
Ici Radio Prague, programme en langue française des émissions internationales de la radio tchèque, Onde Courte. Pour bénéficier d'une agréable réception, voici la grille de nos horaires en temps universel et fréquence en kilohertz. Six heures vingt-sept. Europe, 5930, 7345. 7h30, 7h57, Europe, 9880, 11600. 16h30, 16h57, Europe, Afrique Centre, 5930, 17485. 18h30, 18h57, Europe, Afrique Ouest, 5930, 13580. 22h, 22h27, Amérique du Nord, 7345, 9415. Nous vous invitons à l'écoute sur le web. Pour cela, veuillez vous connecter au site www.radio.cz/français. Radio Prague est aussi sur le satellite. Vous trouverez toutes les informations sur notre site www.radio.cz/français.